that made that sound. All right.
So gross.
Here we are on another episode of the Mind Body Marathon. And on today's episode, we're going to talk about the Cheeky Monkey, which is a race we just did. And, you know, here on the episode, we're the four guys, the four vertebros, which did the race. And then, you know, Dr. Matt was on the team here, and that was the mustache that you heard at the very beginning.
Yeah. Mind-body mustache.
The mind-body mustache. And then we have Zach Goulet and Jared Bagage also on the show. The four of us were the team, the 24-hour relay of the Cheeky Monkey. So basically, this was a race that we just did this past weekend at the beginning of September. And basically, you can have 4 8-man teams, and you run as many miles as you want within 24 hours. And there's no real, you know, restriction on basically how many miles you can run at a time or the length of time, or you could break it up however you want. And we decided to do, we'll get kind of get into talking about what we
the hardest way possible.
Yeah, the hardest way possible, essentially. But we were able to get through 160 miles. You know, stayed up all night and ran. We only ran about, we did 22 hours instead of 24.
Yep.
Yeah, we called it.
But yeah, so what did you guys think of the overall experience? I'll get a little bit in the history of it all too.
I loved
from,
it.
From Jim Chaney.
I loved it.
Right from the gun, you were asking people, like, would you do it again? And you were pretty game on.
Yeah, it was fun. I would actually, now having a day removed from it, I would do it the same because I really cherish that 2-hour section, even though it sucked. It just, like, being in that moment, like, for me, I learned how to push through, like, that discomfort, because in any ultra that I've done, I've always gotten to a point. Besides Grand Canyon, actually, but I've always gotten to a point where I've cramped up in my quads. And then it's just like managing that, trying to work through that. And I got to a point in that 2-hour section where my quads wanted to cramp up. And then I just readjusted my pace or my stride, my gait. And I knew that I was tired. I knew that I had been working all that day. And I knew that I was facing him from being sick last week. And I never stopped. I kept running. I just readjusted, and I was like, oh, that's pushing through that pain that they always talk about, like the pain cave and all that stuff. It's like that for me was like my time to, like, I actually got to work on that.
Yeah, well this brings up a good point, because I think people are kind of wondering what the significance of this type of race would be. So we covered in 24 hours, we're really 22 hours because we didn't run the last two, but in 22 hours, we ran 160 miles total between the four of us. So that's average of 40 miles per person. And so we went oldest to youngest. So I let off at 9 o'clock, and then the race ended the next day at 9 o'clock. And so it went me, Matt, Zach, and then Jared. So in the first hour, we all kind of pushed it a little bit harder and then kind of slowly trailed off as the day went on. By the fourth cycle of it all, because that would mean there's six cycles within 24 hours of four, that by the fourth cycle, we combined the 2 hours of 4 and 5 together so that way we can have a longer extended sleep. And so that was what Zach was just referencing. Now, we ended up running kind of basically between like anywhere from 7 and 10 miles within the first three rounds of the hours. And then by the time we got to the nighttime, then, you know, the sledgehammer started to come out for us. And so it took us down. So basically, you know, this is a unique running. I mean, this is kind of like what brings up like why running is so fun right now, because it's a unique running event, right? It's it's not a true ultra, but it's also not like running 40 miles either. Like it's you know, it's kind of crammed within 24 hours. It's you're losing sleep, you know, you have to stop running for a couple of hours and start back up again. And so there's this whole process to it that I think adds a unique element of strategy, but also struggle.
I think the times down where you're just sitting around were as hard as actually running, because like you're just tightening up. And at that point, like I thought about this 1,000 times when we were out running, strategizing, because some teams went every mile and they switched off. Some went every two and then kind of started to add mileage in towards the end of the day, where we just went out. The first three runs were going to be 1 hour apiece. And then we hit that 2 hour break. And then we went back to one more hour at the end. And strategizing with that, I never felt like horrible during the actual running portion until like probably an hour and a half into the 2 hour section, where then like just my body started to be like,
well, that was like new territory for you, you know, in terms of like distance.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's so many goals that I hit this, like this run. I've always been a more milder distance guy. I've always like, I grew up track and field. Yeah. I've gone to, you know, half marathons, but this was my first marathon distance, my first 30K or no, not 30K,
50K,
50K hit 40 miles, all with like literally 12 miles or less training in the last like 6 months.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
There was a lot of doing that, but like I never felt horrible except for like my 4 miles in that 2 hour period. But strategizing, like thinking about the best case scenario, it's almost more limiting the amount of time off, because like I felt fine during the run. I would just cramp up like after and then have to do like so much loosening up those first couple miles.
So do you think it would almost be like let's kind of get into maybe how we would have changed it. Based on what we actually did, I felt like the only limiting thing for me was food. I just couldn't really seem to get a decent amount of nutrients in that little window, which was 3 hours, but still it just didn't seem like I was actually processing it quick enough.
You don't think it was like doing the 10 miles at marathon pace at the start? That wasn't your limiting factor?
I did do that.
Yeah. Which may have contributed to the food.
Yeah, I took a shotgun to my quad at the start.
I think it was a little bit warmer than what we were anticipating, because in Ohio it had been about 72 degrees average for the like last 2.5 weeks. And then it shot up to 82 degrees the day of the race. And each one of us had about two runs in the heat of the day. So heat factor is going to definitely kill part of your, you know, your stomach on being able to take down food. I know Zach and I were talking about nutrition earlier on in the week. I think I calculated out that I needed to sustain about 7,800 calories all throughout the day, whether it be during the actual race and taking in gels and whatnot, or just eating. Outside of running itself, I ate 3 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and half a plate of pasta. And I just was so worried about cramping up like during the run.
Yeah.
That I couldn't do it. And then I had so much of like, oh, I want to stretch and I want to roll and
nothing.
I want to go
you
to
just
the bathroom.
Sat around.
Yeah.
And like, that was probably my second heat was probably the most painful of like just overall running. Cause I just felt like that was a prime time to get in a ton of nutrition that early on in the day. And I just got done running after my first leg and just sat and like listened to music. And it was like, at one point I'm like, you idiot. Like that was the perfect time to eat. And then now you're only an hour out of running again.
Well, what was interesting is, so I asked Jim Chaney, so the race took place down in Canton. And I asked Jim Chaney kind of what was the origin of the race? What was his, you know, thoughts behind it? And basically he referenced an event he did in 1979 at Copley High School, and it was put on by the MS Society of Akron, and it was a 24-hour team relay on the track, and the rules were very firm, he said. Basically, there was a 10-person team that you had to have, and it could be a mixture of men and women, but his was all men, and basically one runner and 1 mile at a time, meaning like one runner ran a mile, and then you switched off. And then you were restricted to run only 1 mile at a time. And then you had to go to the next runner. And then basically, if somebody dropped out, you just shrank the overall amount of people running, but you had to keep the same exact order. You couldn't switch the order. Mm-hmm. And it was built as a competitive race. And it was kind of a little bit standardized, you know, to keep it that way. But basically, when the year he did it, you know, he said that Richie Sporting Goods won the team. Richie's running team won the race with an average of 4:49 pace for 24 hours.
Jeez.
So they ran 4:49 for full 24 hours with running 1 mile at a time. Chaney's team ran 5:12 and was eighth overall, which is insanely ridiculous at how fast people were back then.
And wasn't he in high school when he did that? Yeah.
Potentially. It was in 79. I don't know that to be true, but you might be right.
I'm pretty sure he said that.
But then he said he couldn't really get any like tracks in the area to bite on such a competitive idea, or even just to donate their track for 24 hours. So then he turned it into kind of more of a silly event. And then that's where the term cheeky monkey comes in, which is a British term meaning silliness. And then he references an SNL skit, Saturday Night Live skit with Mike Myers. And the character's name is Simon. And he's doing summer vacation drawings. And in that skit, he says cheeky monkey like 10 times, basically, basically like talking about silly person, like, are you silly person? So anyways, it was sort of a, and that's kind of how, I mean, it there was maybe only like, I would say two or three teams that were kind of taking it pretty serious, mm-hmm. you know, maybe including even
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
You know, we were there to have fun, but yeah, we like when we're out there, we've definitely pushed.
Tried.
It.
Yeah. We pushed.
And you know, there was the one team up front that were, they were trying to average sub six the whole time. Did they ever end up doing that?
I mean, they ended at six, so they never actually finished, like technically completed it.
Oh, so they definitely did not average.
I think they bailed before we decided to bail.
Oh, okay. Jared, what were your thoughts on the cheeky monkey?
Yeah, first time I've ever run above the marathon distance in a day. So I finished with 42 miles, and you know, definitely the hardest part of it was that 2-hour block at 3 a.m. to 5 a.m. in the morning.
So how were your miles broken up?
So I started off with 9, then I did a 10, an 8, a 15. Yeah.
That okay.
That's how I broke it up.
Then got gypped on that last one.
Then, right. Yeah.
He was supposed to end the race for us, but didn't do that final hour for us because we only did the 22.
So to clarify, it wasn't that he just quit. We had calculated out that the next closest team would have had to run 10 miles at a 6-minute pace in order to catch back.
Yeah, second place wasn't going to catch us.
For the last 2 hours.
For the last 2 hours. Second place wasn't. It wasn't that we were being lazy. It just.
Oh, yeah, this is right. With reference to bailing. One of the reasons why I felt like this was a smart idea is, one, Jared has a marathon coming up where he's looking to run really fast. And when you're looking to run a fast marathon, it's not about just being tough and like, obviously, like just hammering miles mm-hmm. in terms of like ultra stuff. You have to be able to handle the high end, you know, speed work. And he just was not like he that 15 miler like cooked him in the middle of the night and he was suffering pretty good. So it's like anything we could do to kind of save his legs for that last mile would have been good. Mm-hmm. And then the most vulnerable portion going into it or person was Zach with having been sick. And you definitely could have done something out there, but it probably would have been like mine. So my last hour, I only covered 4 miles. So it took me, so I was averaging 15 minutes a mile the last hour. And I just was trying to put some work in.
I will say this, that this is like another thing that I like take away from that race and just like kind of even from like my backpacking trip I did, and it just reinforces this idea in my head, is that I can never listen to myself when I first wake up in the morning. Do not listen to that guy, or when I wake up from anything. So like when I woke up from after my 2-hour leg, I was like, how the heck? Because I thought that I was going to wake up and hear you get out of the tent to start your leg, and then I was going to kind of like get myself wound up to do my leg, hearing you come out to get ready for yours. And then I woke up at 5:35 and I was like, oh man, Leo's already out there. And I was like, oh my gosh, I got to get ready in like an hour and a half. And then I was laying there and I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. You came back. I was still laying in the tent. And then that's when we, you know, decided just like call it. But then once we started breaking stuff down, my body started to slowly kind of warm back up. And I was like, okay, I could go out there again. And it always reinforces me, is like, do not listen to yourself when you first wake up in the morning, because that's the most comfortable that you're going to be throughout the day until you go back to bed.
Yeah.
And it's like, just give yourself a chance.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I know. I tried. I got it for that final hour, which was for me was 5 to 6 in the morning. So I got up, moving around, went down, and then my knee was pretty bad. And then I like didn't even try running until Jared came over and handed off, and then I tried running. Did you see me instantly start walking? It was like 10 strides, and I'm like, yeah, I'm walking. I can't do this. And then Zach actually reminded me that was actually the knee I fell on in the Grand Canyon. I totally forgot about that. That's why that was so beat up. But yeah, it was bothering me pretty bad for the last basically 3 hours of the whole run.
So, and you probably started to feel it around the same mileage that you destroyed it at. So I was just letting you know that.
Yeah, don't go farther. Yeah. Okay. So let's kind of then, now that we kind of gave some backstory and what we all did. So I ran 43 miles. Jared ran 42. Matt ran 40 flat. And then Zach ran 35.
Yeah.
And then of course Zach and Jared did not do the final hour. So their obviously numbers were a little lower. And then I went 10 for the first hour, which is what Zach was joking about earlier. I wanted to get some decent amount of the run at marathon pace. So I ran about 6:25-ish pace for 10 miles. And then ran 9 miles for the next time, and then 8 miles for the third time. And then only 12 for the hour 4 and 5. With that last half hour basically walking for 15 minutes a mile, and then the final hour, 15 minutes a mile. And then Jared kind of just was
steady Eddie.
Yeah.
Didn't really like hammer at all in terms of what he was capable of, but just kind of went out there and covered it. But that 15 miler, that had to be a pretty decent effort.
Oh, it was. I saw the time and I thought, you know, if I can, because I think I started at like 3:03 or 3:04 in the morning. And I thought, well, you know, if I just average 7:30 pace, like that I'll shave off 30 seconds a lap. So in the end, hopefully when I do the exchange, it's like right at the hour mark.
Yeah.
And I was doing pretty good the first hour of that 2 hour block. And then I think once I hit mile 10, things just, the pace got progressively slower and the effort just maintained. Like,
dude, that gorilla jumped on your back.
Yeah. I felt the same, like the effort was the same, but the pace just kept getting slower and slower. So I like went like 7:40, 7:50, 8:05, 8:10. I was like, oh my gosh.
That's so fun.
I wish I was that lucky to have gone that fast in those last like 4 miles of that longer portion. I felt the same way. I felt great that first 7 miles. And then my body was like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, you literally have run 8 miles 2 times before this. And I ran a half marathon at Medina. And then I did a 12 mile run last week with Zach. And that was the longest mileage that I've done this year. And it just, my body was like not having it. And then I started getting like, I've always been prone to like IT band stuff on my right leg. And then like weirdly, because I had switched to super shoes for that portion, cause I was like, I just need like as much spring in it. I think it was detrimental. I think if I would have just stuck with the Hyperions that I had just bought the day before, I would have been fine. But I think with that carbon plate, it was like springing into my toe and I was like getting some really weird big toe pain. And it was like changing my gait, and it was literally just mitigating like how much stride I could put on the outside of my foot and not flare up my IT band, but not. And then surprisingly my last lap, knowing that I was going to be handing off to Zach, I just like crushed it in like 2 minutes faster than that. But surprisingly my last run of the day was actually probably my most comfortable.
Yeah.
I mean, it was definitely my like slowest miles. I mean, my slowest mile of the long portion was the slowest mile I've ever run in my entire life. ever. Like even from like in sixth grade when I started running. That's hilarious. How bad it was. But it just was like going through there. But I never felt like in like really bad. Like, you know, when you've been like hurt in a run where you're like, oh crap, like
it's that low threshold discomfort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but like, so that was like the surprising thing for me, I think, through all of this was like mentally just pushing through. Like, I know that I could have done faster for as much, but I probably would have only gotten like 2 more miles in, and just like pushing through that like low grade of like torture.
I know that was a lot of like my legs were like negotiating with myself. I'm like, do I really push it just to get an extra mile out of this one, or do I just like, you know, bag it and just kind of, because I really wanted to try to hit 50. I was really pretty hell-bent on that. And I think I really could have done it had my knee not flared up, because I think I could have mustered out eight or nine in that last one had I actually, because I felt great energy-wise. My gut actually was feeling the best of the day. But like I just couldn't. But what did you guys think of the mile loop? Did that, because you know, a lot of times you hear of like people doing ultras and long distance events and stuff like that. And if it's the same repetitive loop, you know, people are like, oh God, that sounds like torture. I actually found it to be very therapeutic.
Yeah,
Yeah,
not one bit did I ever hate it.
Yeah.
It's shocker, because like literally everybody would be like, that sounds terrible. But like all of us are like, that was actually pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. I was really thankful for me and Matt's long run last week, because at this point, I'm not a fan of the towpath anymore. I don't know why. Mm-hmm. Like I'll go run maybe like a 4 mile run, but if someone's like, do you want to do a long run on the towpath? I'm like, I'd rather just like scoot my eyes out.
That's awful.
But like I enjoyed that long run because it went by so fast, because we were having a good time talking and just like enjoying ourselves. And then part of it was to kind of set up for Cheeky Monkey. Yeah, and I loved it.
It was a crushed limestone path.
It was good too, because that one team that was like cheering everybody on, like when you would run by them, I would always run by them, get cheered on, and then I would forget about them on the back part of the, and then it was like, oh yeah, I forgot there's going to be like people back here again. Yeah. So that was pretty fun to look forward to.
Yeah, it was a mile loop, but it had so many unique phases to it.
Yeah.
That you had like these like 200 to 400 meter sections that were like distinct.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that broke it up enough where you're like, okay, here's this. Okay, here's this. Okay, here's this. And then, you know, like I could just close my eyes and just, you know, remember every single contour of that path by this point. It's just,
Like the little uphill puncher at the beginning when you first start, that was always great, because you would get to the start and then you're like, all right, I got this little puncher here. And then you're like, all right, I can't wait to get up over that, because I'm just going to coast down into the, like into the path. And I liked it. Yeah. Like it was nice, because you could focus and then kind of like let your mind go a little bit, but then get to another part where you had to focus. Because I always got tripped up in that little like soft gravel section on the back of the course. And I'd be like, no, next time be over so you're more in like the firmer section. Every time I get there,
I think the hardest part for me was always knowing that team of eight that we're going to be trying to hit like sub 6 minute. And I'm trying not to get in their way, you know, and block them. And there's like a couple of sections on the very back end of it, like where like there's a neighborhood where it's a little uneven. You can see where like when they were paving it, there was like some tire grooves. And every time forced into those grooves. And I honestly think that's why my IT band flared up, because it's just enough dip and having to jump over there subtly to get out of the way of somebody trying to pass you.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that was hard about that course too is they called it Gorilla Hill, which was really not bad. It was maybe 30 or 40, you know, feet tall or something like that. But if you're doing it on a mile loop, that adds up, obviously. But it was a little bump, and then you get to the top of it, and all of the gain that you had, you lose it on one quick downhill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that required two quick turns, and it was the softest gravel. Mm-hmm. So like you basically lost all of your momentum. Like you couldn't really capture the fact that you were going downhill, especially if you had like a bum knee or something like that. Like you kind of just had to like limp your way down that gingerly and not really accelerate.
Yeah.
I would definitely say in the later portions of it too, it was actually probably the most painful part of the whole course was that downhill.
Yeah, that quick little downhill, exactly.
Because you just don't trust your sea legs anymore, and you got to like restrict your speed, and that's just like tightening muscles up that you don't
need. Or the animal that was decomposing in the woods.
Oh my God, man, there's that one turn, dude.
Well, you know, right past where the group was cheering.
Like they were right by it. How did they? They were like, they just must have been delirious.
I think they were having a couple brewskis. Yeah. So they were,
they didn't even have a tent. They just slept on sleeping bags on the ground. Yeah,
well, that was the other thing. Almost nobody had tents. There was only like two or three teams that had tents.
That was a game changer. That was so nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt like having a little bit of a place to sleep was good. And that group on the back stretch, that group we're all talking about, like, they kept me alive a couple times.
Yeah.
It's like you're going past and they're like, ah, hey, good job. And I'm like, oh, yes. someone knows I'm here. And then like right across the start line, I good friends with a couple of those guys trying to go sub six, and they would always like say my name.
Encouraging.
And, like,
yeah.
That was always good to hear every once in a while.
Yeah, it was.
You know, in the wee hours of the morning when no one's like really awake mentally, it's like just hearing something out there every once in a while is like just kind of revitalizes you a little bit. So that was good. It was good to hear.
Would you guys do it again?
Yes,
100%.
Yeah, I'd do it again.
Would I actually get some long runs in before? Absolutely.
Now you guys can see why the things like the Hood to Coast and Ragnar's and like Realize are real, you know, Bourbon Chase and all that are pretty popular, because it's essentially that same idea.
Right.
But you're in a van and you're traveling to the next stop, and then, you know, there's a little bit more formalized.
Have you done one before? Have you done a relay style race? No.
No, I've done Ike and relay style stuff down in Atlanta when I was running for the Atlanta Track Club, but I've never done like a Hood to Coast. I've crewed like for them a couple times, but never actually run it. Yeah.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I liked every aspect of it.
What's that?
You've done one?
No, but just like it would be fun. Like, yeah. I mean, I'm talking about Cheeky Monkey. Like, yeah. It was fun.
I like the planning of it. Like, just thinking of like, all right, what are we going to do for sleep? What are we going to do for food? I just better execution of the food portion.
We brought like, we ate maybe 5% of the food we brought.
Yeah. We brought. It's always the case.
Yeah.
It's always the case.
So how would you do it different? Would you do it different at all?
I think I would. I as much as you guys like the 2 hour portion, I only, when you went to go run, so Leo was before me, when he went to go run, there was the tent next to us. The group of guys had, they must have lived in close proximity to where the race was. So they left and went back and slept, and they came back and they were catching up with two other team members. So the whole time they were talking very loud.
Yeah.
And it was like, I just couldn't sleep. And I think at that point too, I was getting some muscle soreness and I was kind of afraid of what was going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, for the 2 hours. And so I was like, crap. Like,
yeah, that's why my text was like, just get out of this alive. Just be safe. Like, don't roll an ankle. Don't blow out a back.
And you so know. I think my anxiety, I only probably got like maybe an hour of sleep total. And I think strategically of not like cooling down for that much time, like would have actually been better. I think I would have been able to maintain a much faster pace.
I think that brain tap was the game changer for me, because I mean, you guys could have definitely utilized that, but I didn't know you brought it.
I'm pretty sure you fell asleep with it on at some point because you had it on and I was like,
wow. When you came in the tent, I had it on. Yeah. That's the thing. It gets put you to sleep.
Yeah. I was sitting there watching and I saw these like flickering lights and I was like, dude, did you bring brain tap?
Well, I know at one point I woke up and Jared was still there and it was 30 minutes before he was taking over running.
That's so Jared.
And I was like, Jared, you got to wake up. Like, you got like 28 minutes until you have to be down there. when Zach was running and he just like turned over in his sleep. And I was like, oh my God, am I going to have to go out there and like run more laps with him?
What time did you get up?
Oh, it was like literally, I think he woke up, I think like 4 minutes later, his alarm went off or something.
Yeah. I had it planned out. I'm trying to get as much sleep as possible, but to be honest, I really wasn't asleep. I was just laying there with my eyes closed. Like, it was, for one, there were too many lights and I don't do well with lights, and the voices around, like you could hear people, like it was like right beside you. So like, no, I didn't really get any.
But that's the beauty of it all, though. Like, I knew going into that's what the case was going to be. Like, it's just you finish, but then you have like you finish and you get the relief. But then as you're walking back up to your camp, you go, oh, I got to go again. So, like, you get that low grade anxiety in the back of your head that you're about to get going again. What do I need to do? Like, it's exciting. So, it's like going into it next time, you're going to know that sleep is going to be very little because it's just the way it is.
Yeah. You know? So how would you do it different? How would you guys do it different?
So then? I thought about this a lot yesterday after
the race. Do like Matt's idea.
Of which?
Doing
10K.
A 10K.
I think 10K from a like set pace would be ideal. Especially if you had an 8-person group. I think that is the most ideal speed. Because you shouldn't be getting into that much lactic production. And it would give you with 8 people about 4.5 hours of rest in between. And you would only be doing, I think,
but we didn't have 8 people.
Well, I know. I'm just saying, I'm
about so for a 4-person.
Would you say then 20K for us for four?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it. Basically just 12 miles.
Yeah.
For the two. Would you do it at a 2 hour stint or would you do it at, because if you go that slow, you could easily do it at a 2 hour stint.
I'd have to actually calculate, like, if theoretically we hit that those times, like,
yeah,
what actual mileage we would end at.
I mean, that mileage is still mileage. Like, that's,
I always like that. I do like the concept of setting the tone at the first one, even though you know it's going to burn you later.
Yeah.
But it's like, what if it doesn't? Then you like knock it out of the park and you run something ridiculous.
Yeah, you're up 2 miles.
But you don't know until you do it. If you go in too conservative, then you're like, you might have been leaving money on the table. Right. Like, yeah, you get through the event a little bit more positively, but also like you're not as proud of yourself. Right. I mean, just bottom line.
Yeah.
And plus I like the idea of like, I do this often in marathons too, where I just go out way too fast. And then my last 10K is like hard, but it's like, I don't know. There's something about that struggle with that, you know, the last 10K being difficult and just not able to hit your paces and just really trying to hold on, that is somewhat appealing.
Do you remember offhand what we calculated to run 50 miles a person was?
Well, to run 50 miles a person, yeah. So like basically you would have had to run 2 of the legs at 10 and the rest at nines. Yeah.
What would pace wise?
No, wait, that's not right.
No, two nines 40. And the rest eights.
Yeah, 2 nines and the rest eights. That's what it was. Yeah, 2 nines and the rest eights. Yeah.
No, I like the idea of keeping it at an hour. I think because mentally you're just like, it's an hour more. Like you can plan it out on the watch. Like you know exactly what time you're going to run versus, I mean, you that would be all right having, you know, some ambiguity, like a 10K at a time. Like, you know, you'd be running at like, you know, 5:39 a.m. instead of 5 a.m. You know what I mean? And so like I feel like for myself, like I tried to be as close to like the handoff at the exact hour mark, because that mentally that just made more sense to me. Mm-hmm. But you know, having that might break it up a little bit more. So if I were to do it differently, I would probably add more protein into my diet. Yeah. Like there was no protein. There was just sugar and
yeah, you brought those carbs. Nerds, dude.
Nerd clusters, bro. Yeah. And Coca-Cola.
That's so funny.
Actually, to retort, I would go back and switch where our 2 hour time was. I would do that first.
I mean,
have that energy, I think.
I would almost think that if you just did like either a 4 and a 2 or just 6, just get it out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with the 6 is like, then it's like no point in staying, you know, like for the full 24 hours. So part of the allure is having
everybody. Got a grill. You can grill some meats afterwards, hang out.
That ties up an hour. Or like something just like, you know, 2:22 kind of thing. And then just being like, all right, in these two, we're going to go, you know, we're not going to go all out. We're not going to try to run like 16 to 18 miles. We're going to try to run, you know, 13 to 15 sort of thing. That could be a decent strategy as well.
Yeah.
But overall, I didn't think our strategy was terrible. I mean, I really think had I not had a bum knee, I could have executed. And I think Jared would have been close as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you could have squeezed out another 8 and got to 50.
Yeah, I probably could have if I really had to. I mean, like
the first 2 miles would be like, oh my gosh.
Then and you then would just you would unlock.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and that's just that you just gotta, it's like, you know, it's like with the stock market. When the stock market's high, everybody can't imagine it being low. And when it's low and you can't imagine it being high. It's like when you're cold, you can't ever imagine being warm. And when you're warm, you can never imagine, you know, and it's like it's hard to relate to things that are not what your current state is.
Right.
So like if you're running and your first leg is really stiff and you're really struggling to get moving, you just have to calm down and just realize this will not last forever. It genuinely never does. The stomach pain will go away. The knee pain will go away. Like you just got to ease into it. Just like I always say to patients, like don't let your highs get too high and your lows get too low when they're running races. It's like, just try to stay even keel and you're going to get through it.
Yeah. You just got to be in the moment, man.
I think it's also interesting to think about, like you don't really in that moment of running have a ton of like competition.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because like everybody's running different paces and they're always like entering onto the course at different times. So like you really, I mean, aside from one of my miles on my last leg, I didn't run with anybody at all.
Yeah.
You're just literally 40 miles in your own head, just kind of plugging away. And, you know, you get people to cheer for you. You know,
I think the competitive nature is just between your team. So you're not letting your team down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're being competitive within yourself, but because you don't want to let down the team of like not being able to like put forth the effort that you need to be able to execute or like dip out, you know, at the half hour mark and not at the hour mark because.
And it's such a different event too. Like every other, you know, track and field, road racing, I shouldn't say every, because there are a few exceptions. And this is one that, you know, you're not racing against time. You're racing against distance, which is just, that's so different from what at least I've ever experienced. Like this is the first time that, you know, the winner is who ran the furthest instead of who ran the fastest.
Yeah, that's a good point. So
that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, I think this was a fun episode and I think we kind of gave this race its due and threw out some strategies and some insights into how it felt for us and what the experience was like for us. But not sure if it's going to run again next year. And if it does, be sure to partake because it was a great event. Couldn't say more positive things.
Yeah, it was fun.
The venue was great. You know, the loop was great. Chaney and Run to Your Racing did a great job of putting it on. And you know, Chaney was a champ, man.
I was going to say kudos to him.
He stayed up all night. Yeah. Like he was in it, dude. And he's got a good vision for things. And so, you know, hopefully he feels like this is worthwhile to keep it going.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. All the best. Thanks for listening to another great episode.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Leo here. Be sure to check out my new book, Faster Without Fail, Your Guide to Overcoming Injuries and Running Faster Than Ever. It is now available on Amazon. You could read reviews on the Amazon. You can check out what other people have said about it. But basically, if you want to revolutionize your running form and better understand how to stay injury-free within the sport, this is your guide. Feel free to reach out and let us know what you think of the book. I would love to hear your feedback. But again, please check it out on Amazon. Faster Without Fail. Appreciate it. Dr. Leo here. If you want to catch me in another setting, be sure to check out my YouTube page, Running Rehab, where you will find exercises on how to stay healthy with running, how to improve your running form, and a bunch of other tips and tricks on how to get over common injuries.